Hi, I'm Becca Otis from Five Lines Pottery in Indianapolis, Indiana.
And I'm Ryan Durbin from RD Ceramics, located in Southgate, Kentucky.
And welcome to Wheel Talk.
Hey guys, we've loved answering all of your questions so far. If you'd like to hear your question on the podcast, please send them to us on Instagram at Wheel Talk Podcast or by email to wheeltalkpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks.
All right.
All right.
Hi. We're live.
Hi, Becca.
Hi, Ryan.
We are in the flesh, and we did not start the Skype, but I will start it now.
Oh, good. Oh, yeah.
Nice catch.
Yeah. I'm drinking wine. You're drinking water. The two W's, all we need is somebody to drink whiskey. Wine, water, whiskey.
I'm sure somebody's drinking whiskey out there right now.
Wine, water, whiskey, whatever. That's what I say when I do my...
Whiskey what?
When I do my shitty cups, I say wine, water, whiskey, whatever.
Whatever. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, I got a new... I've just decided to... What I think that I'm going to do, except for the mugs, is just everything in my booth is going to be $15 or 4 for 50. The whole booth.
Everything in the booth?
Yeah, no. I mean, like, the big stuff won't be, but everything else.
Would that be like a small item table or something?
I'm thinking like two shelves or whatever. Be like, everything on these shelves are 4 for 50.
Yeah, that seems perfect for your, like, mystery box... sale thing.
Yeah, and
that,
like,
kind of price range item.
Yeah, and I got $150 yesterday at the farmer's market it was only 4 for $50 deals. Worked out.
So three people took a hold of it, huh?
Yeah, which is big.
Was it
for a
pretty self-explanatory
market?
Or did you have to kind of tell them what was included, or was it organized pretty well so they could tell?
It was organized okay. I was like, hey, everything that's $15 is 4 for $50. How are you, okay, Ryan?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, I'm drinking water. Actually, you mentioned that. I was, I did like a challenge to myself.
Oh, yeah, that was rude. He started the challenge the day before we hung out. Continue.
Yeah, well, I was also feeling sick when I came and saw you, so, so I was sick last week, but I was good. It was not COVID. I never actually figured out what it was.
Yeah, because you even went to the doctor and everything.
Yeah, I was like, what's going on? I was very fatigued, so, but we didn't figure it out. It's all right. I'm back to normal now.
That's good.
It's been over a week since then, so, but yeah, I was challenging myself to just not drink alcohol. For a week. I'm already, I think, almost two full weeks.
That's pretty good.
And, it's not really, and, like, I was talking with Rachel about it before. I was like, I want to try this. And she's like, why? We don't have a problem. It's like, it's not because you stop drinking because you have a problem necessarily. It could be you just want to, like,
challenge
try
yourself.
It. Or,
yeah.
You know, it's generally going to be healthier to not drink alcohol than to drink alcohol. So it's like,
right.
Why not?
Yeah, like, I drink so little alcohol that I'll go, like, and I know everybody on the podcast thinks that I don't not drink a lot. They think I do drink a lot of alcohol. It's a lie. I actually drink maybe, like, well, I've been drinking more because I accidentally went into a cidery and I bought 6 packs of 4 instead of 2 packs of 4. But, like, that's just,
I still haven't tried that.
Yeah, because you're on your fasting moment. But
we'll let Rachel figure out which one she likes, and then I'll
give it a go. I don't drink very much at all. So, like, this is the first glass of wine I think I've had in probably a month. Except for the Prosecco
and Arnold
dinner
Palmer.
That we had.
That's what I'm drinking.
Ugh, yum. An Arnie Palmy.
Arnie Palmy. I've just basically been filling up this gallon jug with tea.
Yes.
I have the kettle with, like, that I boil the water in for my morning tea, and then I just pour that into, like, a 2-quart thing and fill her up. And
nice.
keep that sweet tea going.
That sweet tea.
Yep. Other than that, yeah, I've been mainly ramping up to get this collab out.
Oh, yeah.
With Briggan.
Yeah.
We initiated that collaboration back in March. March of 2021, I think.
So it's been a whole year and some change.
Yeah. Wow. I want to say March because I think that's when we went and visited
Josh.
Josh. Yeah, I was going to say 2020, right. But I'm like, it's not been that long. Yeah, March of 2021, I think. So.
Yeah. Whew.
Well, it's just like the collabs fall down the list. It's, you know.
Right.
I'm already worried of like, how am I going to sell this? Are people going to like it? Are they not going to like it?
Yeah.
You know,
and you have the upper hand. Like, you have more followers than her.
Yeah. But still, I'm like. You know, they're her form, so there's,
right.
You know, some slip, it's all slip cast work. She does slip casting, so she slip cast some tumblers, a couple mugs, some bottles that are like moonshine jugs, kind of.
Yeah.
And then there's milk jugs. The milk jugs, I think, is what she's mostly known for. Like,
yeah, I have one.
If you see her stuff. And, yeah, so she's fairly close by. She's up in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And I was just, you know, I got like 3 damp boxes filled with work from her, 2 or 3 damp boxes worth, and was slowly carving them over time.
Yeah.
They look cool. And then clear glazed them, and yeah, they're pretty sweet.
They look really
cool.
So
I think I'm a little numb to them because I've seen them around so long, and I've just been like waiting to get them out of the house. But, you know, I'm excited how they turned out, and I think a lot of people enjoy them, so...
Yeah.
So we'll see. We got that going live on Sunday. I saw you were doing a restock, and you just did... I think you did a restock since we last talked, but how's that stuff been going?
Oh, my God. It was fucking terrible. Out? It was so bad.
Which one was terrible? The fancy cup?
Yeah, the fancy cup restock, because... well, I don't know. I didn't give, like, almost any notice, which was on purpose. I wanted to see how it went when I gave, like, no notice, but... my website.
When you say on purpose, do you mean it's 2 days before and you're like, I want to do this, let's do it, I don't care? Or do you say on purpose because after the fact you're like, well, I kind of need the money regardless, so it's kind of on purpose?
No. I was like, I'm gonna, like, it was, you know, I'd finished them and I was like, I'm gonna try and not, like, give it a week. You know, I'm gonna try and, like, do it, like, a day or two before.
But you were posting that you were working on them.
Right.
I
had been posting that I was working on them. But I have barely sold any of the big ones. Like, I did sell some of them. I'm not saying I didn't. I did. But it's, yeah, people are going for the small ones. And, I mean, I got enough for that week.
The big ones being the $100 ones?
Yeah, the $100 ones. I got enough for the week, but it's definitely, like, this is some of my best stuff, for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, for sure. And, yeah, people are, like, not buying. But I think that has a lot to do with the economy. A lot of the people that follow me are poor. Just like
I mean,
I
for
am.
Me, it seems like buying a $100 cup, you would want to plan ahead to be able to set aside money or think of a reason that you want to buy that for $100 versus.
Right. And so now,
you know,
within
a
day,
buying.
Because, like, I kind of wanted to see if I could do kind of like what I do with a flash sale. And see, because sometimes if you do it really quick, it pops off really well, and sometimes if you plan, it pops off really well. So it's like, I just wanted to see how that worked. But I still have stuff in the shop and I'm okay with it. I might take them to the farmer's market, and also I have a show next week, so that'll actually be good to, like, have them at the show.
Well, you're making them live. I had a little hiccup too, because you were making them live when I was there. It didn't really go live at the right time or something.
Yeah, no, it, like, I set it to go live at 5, and I was doing a podcast with Rebecca from the Maker's Playbook, and while it was going on, I, like, at the very end of the podcast, I realized that it never went live. So then I, like, posted them an hour late, and, like, it was just, like, whatever. But I do have 2 funny stories to tell you.
Okay.
The first one is not so funny, but Lloyd, like, I was brushing my teeth one morning and I hear like water dripping on the floor and I like ran into this room. Lloyd had knocked my water bucket off of my wheel and it had enclosed my laptop with water.
Oh no.
With clay water.
So wait, it was sitting on top of your Aspire wheel?
Yeah. And he had like knocked it off. It's pretty secure up there. Like it's pretty secure, but now it's on the floor because now I know. But it's pretty secure up there. And I normally actually move my laptop to another table, fully knowing that that is a possibility because I have a cat named Lloyd. And, but I didn't that day. And mm-hmm. so he like knocked it off and like water got like all over my laptop. But it's working. It's working so far. So hopefully it works for many years to come. But
yeah, you went all out with this recovery effort.
It's an $1,800 laptop. Like, I'm not going to just, like, give up with a little fight. Like,
No. I know. Do you want to tell people what you did?
I took the back off. Like, I cleaned it up with a toothbrush. Like, I'm not fucking taking this laptop and just being like, oh, it's fine. Like, no. Like, I don't have $1,000 to spend on a laptop. Like, no. Like, I mean, I do, but...
You, like, threw it in a bag of cat litter or something.
Cat litter for, like, 3 days until I was waiting for my tools to, like, take the moisture out. But thankfully, because it was such thick water, I think, it didn't really seep in. And the laptop was closed. So that was good.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, the keys seem like the most vulnerable area.
Yeah, one of the USB ports seems to be a little clogged up. That's the one that didn't have anything in it. So, mm-hmm. I might have to, like, look in there and kind of clean it out with a needle tool or something. But, yeah, so it seems to be fine. Now, here's my second story that's really funny. So, I went to this pizza place the other night. It was probably, like, 8 p.m. No, it was 9 p.m. So, it was, like, dusk, right? And,
Did you get a pizza with carrot slices on top instead of pepperonis?
Yeah, I did. No, I got a cheese pizza because their cheese pizza is fucking bomb. So I got a cheese pizza and I got breadsticks. And I always get breadsticks because when you're driving home, you either want to have a piece of pizza or breadsticks, right? So I get breadsticks and I'm like at the light right after this, right after this pizza place. And picture me, I'm driving. So then I like turn towards my passenger seat and like open up the breadstick box and like put one of the breadsticks in my mouth and it's like in my mouth and I like my eyes like float up and there's this guy right next to me and my windows are down because I have no AC. So there's this guy like right next to me. His windows are down and he's just looking at me and I like smile and I'm like, you want one?
He was in the car next to you, right?
Yeah, he was in the car next to me. He was in, like, a truck.
Okay.
And I was like, you want one? And he was like, he's like, nah, I want you. And I was like, nah. I was like, nah. And then I, like, creeped forward so that he couldn't, like,
I want you like you want that breadstick.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Indianapolis downtown. It was so funny. I was just like, ugh. All my friends were like, why couldn't he have just like lived in this great moment? And like, why couldn't you have just passed him a breadstick?
I was thinking of how you were going to get the breadstick over there. Because I picture it's like dripping in like garlic butter and... You gotta like toss it through your window, through his window.
It would have been up to him to catch it. And I don't know. I mean, I probably could have reached him. With the extension of the breadstick, I think I could
have. Like, and then someone behind you sees a lady in the tramp breadstick or something, like two people grabbing a breadstick out the window.
Anyway.
The Forester and pickup truck. Lady in the Tramp moment.
Lady in the Tramp. Nah, I want you.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, good lord. Anyway, that's what happened, and I was just...
Jeez.
Just giggling over that. It was so funny.
That's great.
This is what's so fun about being like a... For reals, though, like, being like a unstereotypical... woman. Like, you know, I'm not like skinny and beautiful and blah, blah, blah. And so like when things like that happen to me, I think they're fucking hysterical because they have not ever happened to me when I was younger. So it's not like annoying anymore. It's just like, fuck yeah.
Did it seem like a pickup line though? Or did he just seem like he was just kind of being funny?
No, definitely was a pickup line. For sure.
Okay. 100%. Was it coming across rude though?
No. No, it was funny.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, kudos to him because that was a really impressive, like, that was quick.
I mean, he probably didn't expect you to say, "Do you want one?" Like,
exactly. Like, that was quick.
He's thinking on his feet.
Yeah. Also, I recommend this for anybody at a slow market because the farmer's market can be a bit slow. But I love it regardless. I took Mad Libs to the farmer's market and asked all of my customers to provide like an adjective or a noun or whatever was on the Mad Libs chart, mm-hmm. and then posted it to the Instagram, like the farmer's yeah. market Instagram afterwards. It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah. I was wondering if you prefaced it when you were talking to customers, or were you just like, "Hey, I'm working on this Mad Lib. Can you give me a noun, please?"
I did do that. I was like, "Hey, would you like to provide me with a noun?" Like, with no context. Some people that
would be like, "Hey, what's a noun?" And they're like, "Where'd you go to school?"
I know. One lady was like, she had a kid, so she definitely had mom brain for sure. And she was like, "Oh, shit. Baby? How about baby?"
You said adult Mad Libs. I as a kid I would like do the Mad Libs, but I would throw in like curse words and shit.
Oh shit. There was no
curse words. That's what I was expecting when you said adult Mad Libs, and I'm like, "Oh shit, this should be good." And I'm like,
"No, it was like about wine and stuff, you know."
Okay.
It's just like adult subjects. It's no like cuss words or anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like not kids stuff, you know, it's not like a kid right. category. But I do think that having the kids ones would be really funny. I think they underestimate the funniness of the kid ones.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So how did those spoon rests go? I saw people here have not heard, but you have tried the jumped on the spoon rest train.
I have.
Did you sell some?
I yesterday? Did. I sold two. I think one person did not buy it as a spoon rest, though. But who cares? Whatever. Float your boat. Whatever floats your boat. Yeah, so we'll see how they go in the next couple of weeks. But people seem to gravitate towards them. I honestly still don't understand the, like, obsession with spoon rests.
Do you have a spoon to put on them?
No. I will bring one next time. Maybe a plastic spoon.
There you go.
Yeah.
Sure, you got a cool looking spoon to grab some attention.
I do have a really cool looking spoon, and I do not use it a lot.
Or like a paintbrush or something like that would be.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
Also, I made tumblers today, and I feel like I never sell tumblers, but I love making tumblers, so I'm just gonna make them. Continue to make them.
Yeah. Are you doing the little thumb thing in it, like a tumbler?
No. Is there something like that that you have that you just like, no, it doesn't sell super duper well, but you're just like, I'm still going to make these. I like them.
Not really. I mean, no.
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 That's okay.
I pretty much like, if there's something that doesn't sell, I have to really, really, really love making it to keep making it.
I think the tumblers might sell out here. I mean, they didn't sell super well in Washington, but hopefully they'll sell out here.
I mean, there's some things that I make too many of, and they probably sit a little longer than they need to, but it's kind of nice because I don't have to make more of them.
Yeah.
For sure. So, like, right now I have a ton of berry bowls that are glazed and stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's a good example.
I'm only going to sell, like, maybe a max of 5 at a show.
That's a good example.
So, sure. But also, those are a little more intricate to make when I do have to make 20 of them. You know, it takes a little bit more time and attention.
I have a real show next Saturday. What?
Oh, yeah, what's the show?
I don't know, but it's up in Noblesville. I don't remember what it's called.
You don't know what it's called?
I don't remember.
Noblesville. That's where the music thing is, right?
I don't know.
there's like an outdoor outdoor music what do you call it, amphitheater.
That's where, but
there.
Okay. Yeah, so
I'm sure there's more than just that there.
It seems like a really cute, like, downtown, like historic downtown, and yeah, so I'm excited. We'll see. I made some mixing bowls.
Sweet. Yeah, I saw you made those.
Yeah.
I have yet to get into the mixing bowl game. I haven't made any big bowls in a while. They just, I feel like they take up so much space on the table, but if they're mixing bowls, maybe they get more attention and people would buy them.
I feel like if you do a mixing bowl, you're really going to have to work on your inside curve. Because typically most of your stuff is, like, very angular, you know? Like,
yeah.
It goes flat and then up. In a mixing bowl, you literally cannot have a flat surface in a mixing bowl. It is all curved, you know, because you
and it's got to be wider than it is tall.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's a very precise way to, like, make it. So, like, if you did do it, you'd have to, like, really curve in the inside. And they'd be round. And I don't know if they would necessarily fit with your style, you know?
Yeah. I feel like they would take up a lot of space, too.
They do take, like, up a lot of space. But the nice thing is, if you make different sizes, they can stack inside of each other.
Yeah, that's true.
But they do take up a lot of space. But, like, I took two mixing bowls to the farmer's market the other day, like, a couple weeks ago, and both of them sold immediately. So,
really?
Now, they were cheap, right, because it's me. But,
What pounds of clay are we talking here?
They were small. Like, they were... It was probably, like, 7 inches wide, 3 inches tall.
Okay. So, was that, like, 3 pounds?
No. Like, two, maybe?
Two? Wow.
So, like, a small mixing bowl. Both of them were pretty small. One was smaller than the other. And I sold one for 45 and one for 35.
Okay. Yeah, I was guessing you were probably... You said cheap. I was thinking, like, 40 bucks.
Yeah. So, I mean, but it's just, like, so hard to sell them, like, for tons of money when everything else in my booth is, like, nothing. You know?
Yeah, I was going to do, or when I normally throw those serving bowls, I throw almost 4 pounds and, you know, I make like 3 or 4 at a time. So
do you trim the bottom?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I'm not trimming the bottoms either. So it's like,
Throw them that well to not trim the bottom.
Right. Like, if I'm not going to trim the bottom, then I'm not going to sell it for like a bunch of money. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Do you dimple those in, though? Because they are, like, bigger pieces, and you probably don't expect them to be perfectly flat?
Mm-mm. I'll just let them dry.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, but I think that, like, I have a really large one that will probably be, like, $55 to $65. So. But, like, the farmer's market, like, they think $15 is really expensive for a cup, so.
So they were you pricing the spoon rest at 15?
Yeah, that's like part of the 15 for 50.
Mhm.
Yeah.
Nice.
I figured everything small can be 15. Small enough.
I hope you sell a shitload of the spoon rest at that show that you do.
I hope so too. I have a bunch, so I made a bunch, so I'll glaze them up, but people seem to like them, you know, so.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Get that spoon out there with it, and people know what's going on.
Exactly. And I put a little sign, like, right there that was, like, spoon rest. I think I want to put them in a little bin like you do, though.
Yeah. People love the flip through.
Flip through, yeah, for sure.
I mean, a lot of people are oblivious. They don't even see the bin there, or they see them on the table, and they're like, what's the price on this? Or
yeah.
What is this used for? I'm like, there's a bin right here that says everything you can use it for.
You'll be proud of me. I've been doing really good at standing up when anybody comes into the booth.
Nice. Do you have a shorter chair? Taller chair?
I have a short chair. I couldn't find a taller chair.
Okay.
But I also don't have tables like set up like you do. It's more of like a U-shape setup. So.
But you're behind a table. Like, if you're sitting down, you could almost not be seen.
Oh, I can be seen for sure. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a low table. Like, it's very see-through, so.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Can we talk about that review that we just got?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that was me. So, thank you all for submitting some reviews. I haven't looked at them, honestly, in probably a couple months, and we got a handful of new ones. I don't think I looked at any since May, probably, because I do remember getting this one from Passionate Arts and Crafts from May 11th. I don't remember anything after that, but we got our first one star where somebody actually wrote a review. Yay! With it. Becca's excited. Do you want to read it? Do you have it pulled up?
I don't have it pulled up. You can read it.
Okay, so this came on May 21st from Potter Harry. It's titled, Nice People, But Cut to the Chase, Please. As we are 25 minutes in. It says, after 25 minutes of listening to them talk about nothing related to ceramics, I gave up. Sorry, I wish I had more time to hear them talk about nothing. 1 star.
I wish you had more time to listen to somebody talk about nothing, too, because that would make your life so much better.
I feel like for the people that feel that way, I would recommend doing the interview episodes, because we generally, I mean, we do have a little chit chat at the beginning with them, but
no, fuck them. They can just go away. I feel like
it's pretty to the point when we interview people.
That's true.
But regardless, it's like, hey, you know what? We are who we are.
It's our podcast. It's our podcast. We can do what we want.
Yeah, no, we get a couple comments like that every now and then, and it still like hits me a little bit like, oh. But it's like, is it worth, not that we're going to change our format, but are there things to do to meet in the middle a little bit? And I'm like, is it worth putting a little chapter thing in there to say, jump to this part if you want the actual content? But then I'm like, the people that are saying that, would they even notice that that's an option?
Right.
And then what do? Do you preface every single episode with saying, hey, if you don't want to hear our chatter, skip to the next chapter
or something? No, I mean, just, you know what?
You know.
If you love somebody, like, you accept them as they are. And that's where we're at right now.
It's fine. Most people
know.
Not worth
it. I think that most people know that we stop around 25 minutes. And, like, I keep an eye on the clock. You keep an eye on the clock. We stop right around, like, 20 minutes, 25. So, like, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty predictable.
But then we get reviews and we get listener questions that's saying stuff about the banter, and they hear about the daily lives. And, like, there's, for every comment like that, there's probably 4 other ones that people say they enjoy the back and forth that are not on topic.
I personally think that that's why we were successful, and that's why people do listen to us, because at the beginning it's like, hey, this is what's happening in our life. And, like, you know, most people that are listening to this are throwing. So it's like, oh yeah, like, I want to listen, you know, like, let's talk about it. And we usually have funny things to say. And like, you know, the most comments that we get are, you feel like my studio friends. Like, you feel like you're in the studio with me and we're chatting about life, you know? And I think that that's why it's appealing, like, for a lot of people, because we are so informal.
Yeah, and there's plenty of options out there of people that, you know, have to, they edit it down for time, so they're conscious of people's time. So it's like, I want to get in and out in 35 minutes and give you some good content, where it's like, okay, you're going to have to listen to some crap. For 35 minutes worth of crap.
And you know what?
We'll have probably an hour and 15 of good stuff.
Yeah, like, suck it up, Buttercup.
I mean, you might need to parse through that hour and 15 of good stuff to get everything that you're looking for, but we're going to get to it.
Well, and also, we've been doing this for almost 3 years. Like, I don't even have any relationships that long. Like, we've been doing this for such a long time. Like, what the fuck else are we going to talk about? Like, we're running out of things to talk about already. Like, we have to start with something basic and, like, normal. Like, we have to.
Yeah, it's like, what if we were like, okay, Becca, we can't do our 25 minutes of bullshit. We have to cut right to the episode, and we only have an hour.
Absolutely not. Go. We tried that, and it didn't. It almost didn't even work. Like, and also, I think that I should say that the point of this podcast for us, you know, not for the people listening, but for us, is to, like, be friends and to hang out, you know, once a week.
Yeah.
And that's what they get if they don't want it.
And we'll And we'll, like, save stories of, like, oh, I got this thing I want to tell you.
Like,
but I'll wait until we record so we can do it on the podcast so other people can hear
it. Yeah, exactly. Like, we save things during the week.
Yeah, it's not like we have all these eventful things that happen every single day of our lives.
No. We're like, I can't wait to tell you what happened.
The other thing that happened this past week that I was a little bit like, damn, I missed it. So I was looking at these transit vehicles.
Oh.
And there was one that I came across that was like, oh, this is good. Because I was like, dude, because, you know, the prices of cars are pretty high right now.
I think they're actually pretty, like, low.
Even used cars.
Oh, used cars are high. I don't know. But yeah.
Like I didn't want to... You know, I'm, like, buying a business vehicle
for
the shows and stuff. I was like, I don't want to spend, like, 25 grand on a car.
Yeah, that's like, a lot.
That's more than I would spend on a used. So, obviously, I'm getting it used, and there was this one that came up. It was, like, a 2012, but it was a Transit, but it had a second row, and they were removable. And I was like, oh, man, that's nice. I wish I would have. And it was, like, I think it was listed, like, $10,000.
Oh, you should have, like, jumped on that shit.
I was like, shit. But then I was thinking about it, and... I looked at it a few days later and it was sold already. I think they sold for like $8,000. I was like, shit. But, and then I was like, okay, well, that'll spur me on to, like, start at, because I need to ask questions to my insurance person to say, like, hey, what are the differences whether I buy this as a business only vehicle versus a personal one that I use for business and claim the miles?
Yeah.
Because I'm like wondering if the insurance would be different and how.
No, it's not. I don't think it's different. I don't think it matters.
Because I'm like, it's just me. I'm not like an LLC. So I don't think it really matters. Yeah, no, I think I would still just take the miles. And
essentially. So.
Yeah. And we have the space at the house that I could park it and whatnot. Yeah, so
that off little.
Yeah. And then going to the Berea show last time.
You were like, I really wish I had some.
I could have benefited from that. Because my car is just so limited with the vertical space. Like, it's only got like 2 feet of clearance between.
Yeah.
The seats being down and the roof.
Absolutely.
So I'm very limited with the Transit. I mean, you've got like 4 feet or something.
Yeah. And you're talking about like the Transit Express. It's little, right? It's the small one.
Yeah. It's a Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's the Transit Connect XLT Premium is the one I was looking at, which is not the holy shit package, but like it's like the more compact.
Yeah.
Transit.
Yeah. Those ones are really nice. I like those ones. Yeah. It's so funny, like, being in a car now, like going to the farmer's market in my car versus like taking the van and, like, you know, it's like I had room for 8-foot shelves for, you know, like all these things, and it was so nice. And then now I'm just like shoving the shit in my car. And it's,
I mean, I was foreseeing all the things I was gonna have to do. I'm like, well, now I'm gonna put myself in a situation where I'm gonna feel like I have to upgrade my booth.
No, your booth is great. I don't think you should ever.
But then I'm like, well, I don't know, not necessarily, because I could just take more inventory and then not have to worry about.
And you can leave, you know, and more importantly, you can leave the inventory in your van and all the stuff in your van so that you don't have to, like, take it out every time you get home.
That's a great point.
That's the biggest thing that I think that it, like, a whole separate vehicle for, like,
Living in a secure area where I can trust my
like, you can trust. And plus, even so, even if somebody broke in, like, what are they gonna do, like, steal the fucking tables? Like, like, nobody needs a fucking table. Like, and they don't want your pottery. Like, they can't sell that.
Yeah,
you know, like, good luck.
So I'll be on the lookout.
Yeah.
I think Rachel was like, oh man, you could have got it. Like, what's the deal? I mean, you've got other shows coming up. Like, you're going to benefit from
Well, if you see like while you're looking, if you see like a really good, high top Transit, let me know.
Cause I remember we talked recently and you were looking into possibly getting one. So
yeah, no, for sure. That's what kind of spurred now,
it on.
For sure. Now, life update: at the end of my lease, I will not be re-upping my lease here. I will be moving into a van. So that's the plan, which no one is surprised. So, but I'll be outfitting the plan, a van.
Stan.
Yeah, I'll be outfitting a van, and I want it to be a van, not a bus or anything like that, so I can actually drive it in town. But I will probably buy new, just so that I can get a low interest rate, and I don't have to worry about any past problems because I've already been through that road and I don't need to go through it again. So.
Yeah. Lloyd. Yeah, the one I was looking at was like a 2012. So it was older, but the 10,000, I was like, I mean,
how many miles going to so on many?
I think it was 180.
Oh, that's a lot. Oh, sorry. Sorry. That's Lloyd.
Lloyd. So, I don't know. I was like, you know, how many shows am I doing? How far am I actually going? I'm not going to like Florida with this thing. I'm going like 3 hours away. So, I don't know. I'll be on the lookout, get more familiar with prices I'm expecting and stuff like that. Yeah. So, we'll see how that goes. All right. We had a quick listener question that I wanted to ask first.
Okay.
And then we'll get into the topic. So this one came from E Squared Pottery. It says, what do you think is the best way to convert a wheel to be a standing wheel? Any ideas for raising it and having it on wheels? Also, any tips for good posture at a standing wheel?
That's all you. I don't know.
So
this is all you.
Standing wheel, sitting wheel. I'm not sure what brand of wheel you have, but hopefully it is heavy duty enough that it will be fine sitting on top of cement blocks. So I just got the standard cement blocks you get at Lowe's or Home Depot. And I stand them vertical. So, you know, like a hot dog bun stands straight up. Mm-hmm. Some people like put them on their side and they stack two of them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's kind of overkill. Plus, it takes up more room
on the ground. They're pretty sturdy. I mean, they're 8x8.
Yeah. And if you've got a heavy-duty enough wheel, it's going to put weight down on it, and you can put pressure on the wheel, and it's not going to, like, topple over the bricks. And my wheel, I don't know where your wheel is situated, but if your wheel is situated in a spot where it's against a wall or against a table, like... Yeah. The table is going to help brace the wheel while it's standing on top of the blocks. I mean, sometimes they shift a little bit on the bricks, but it's not going to shift so much that it's going to like topple the bricks and the whole thing's going to fall over. I mean, I worried about that a little bit, but you shouldn't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
And then I have little like 2x4 blocks that I use to help elevate it another couple inches.
Yeah. And that's a good way also, like, pause, if you're not using a standing wheel but you want to lift up your wheel a little bit just to get it more at your height, 2x4s are what I always use.
Yeah So that's a good option. I know some places sell those leg extenders, like Brent has leg extenders that you can get like a kit to where it's like stays the width of the legs, but they kind of go outward and they take up a very small footprint in your studio if you have to worry about that.
Also, and, also an option for like anybody that has an RK2, which is like the solid body ones, like the old school ones, you can use those IKEA tables, the IKEA tables that are like $7, you know?
Is that like an end table or what is it?
Yeah, I guess it would be kind of like an end table, but they're like $7 and they're the square ones. Those fit those, RK2s really well. That's what I used to use to prop up ours. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty sturdy. So
how did the RK2 work? The pedal one is attached to it, right? So you can't.
Right. Yeah. That's the one where the pedal is attached to it. And sometimes, most of the time, it has a hand lever that screws into the pedal and you can move it with your hand. They're fucking workhorses. Those are great wheels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and you'll have to definitely adjust to how you want the pedal, because I initially started with the pedal on the ground and then I found myself, you have just as much body ache and stuff if you keep the pedal on the ground, because let's say your pedal's on the right side, your left leg has to stay anchored because you have to keep your right foot kind of anchored on the pedal, and then it turns out your left hip kind of gets cramped.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, you're not in a natural position to have good body posture when you're doing things with the clay. And generally, if I'm throwing anyways, whether I'm sitting or standing, I will adjust the speed, take my foot off, work at that speed for a period of time.
Right.
And then change the speed and then go back to it. I'm not changing speed while my hands are on the clay. So that gives you the best body posture anyway, so you can get in the most like strong position to center or do a pull or whatever, so that you're not in an awkward position and like contouring, so you hurt your joints or whatever.
Yeah.
But right now I just keep my pedal on the wheel head. I have two Brents, and the pedal fits on the wheel head at the top left corner, and I adjust it with my left hand, and then I'll, you know, do everything up high.
Yeah. Some people throw in a stool too. Like you throw in like a high stool and still put it on the floor. That can help with the body posture as well.
Yeah. I think Speedball has a stool that like tilts forward a little bit. It's not like a flat.
Yeah.
The butt is tilted up probably 20 degrees or something. Yeah. So you're actually leaning forward.
Mm-hmm. I've always I don't stand, as we know, but that's because I can't. Like my foot wouldn't allow for that. But I definitely raise my wheel up to about my belly button. And I find it unbelievable how many people...
Your wheel head is at your belly button?
Yeah, the wheel head is right about where my belly button is. And I find it like surprising how many people are like really bent over. Like even these like big guys, you know, like these big guys that are tall. And, you know, the wheel head's like right at their knees. And I think that if you just raised it maybe 4 inches, like it would alleviate so much back pain. Like I have really good posture when I throw, just because it is where it is. And it's helped a lot with my back and like how, you know.
Yeah. And I always tell like beginners when I'm doing the date nights and stuff, like scoot as close to you as you can to the wheel.
Yeah.
Especially with the splash pan, like you need to be like touching the splash pan with your crotch. You need to be as close as you can so that you can have good body posture as well as strength. You're not going to overwork yourself by being really far away.
Yeah. And just a reminder, if you are sitting, not that we're talking about sitting, but if you are sitting and you're on a rolly stool, that has a lot to do with how like much pressure you're putting on things too. So you really have to be aware of that. If you're like not getting, like if you can't like center 3 pounds of clay, it's probably because you're on a stool that can move. So like get a flat chair or a bucket or something and sit on that instead. So I just thought I'd add that in too.
Yeah. I mean, the chair has a lot to do with your sitting position for sure, with your posture. Mm-hmm. I can't believe some of the things people sit on when they're throwing. I'm like, that looks like the most uncomfortable thing, like a lawn chair or something. I'm like, that thing is like a bucket. How are you sitting in a bucket seat that goes backwards? Your butt is lower than your knees, like, because you're like sunken down. Yeah. Like it just doesn't seem optimal to
Sarah
to get good support on it.
Sarah on the clay. Work sits on this chair that she got at IKEA, and it wobbles. It like goes in a circle, and I'm like, how the fuck do you sit on this? And it's really tall too. And I like sit on the shortest chair I can find. But I sit on a mechanic stool. At the lowest.
It doesn't roll, right?
No, it does roll at the lowest setting. I'm just like good at like, you know, I have really.
If you're close enough, then the body weight going down on the stool is fine. But if you're leaning, there's less pressure downward on it. So it's probably tends to roll.
Yeah, it does. And I like, I'm strong enough to be able to handle it. But also two of my wheels are fucking broken. So, like, it doesn't roll well. So, it kind of just...
Oh,
like,
on the chair. Yeah. I was thinking pottery wheels are broken, but the wheels on the chair...
No, the wheels on the chair are messed up.
Yeah. Well, you also have to... On the wheel at your studio, you have to keep your foot...
On it.
Yeah. Anchored in a spot, and you probably have to get a nice, solid position to the wheel.
Yeah, I could never stand up with that wheel. Ever. Yeah. It would be actually
you'd have to
impossible.
Like rig something up to make that work.
I'd have to get like a 6-foot bike chain or like a 4-foot bike chain to go all the way down to the ground so I can put my foot on the pedal.
Yeah, I would say just give it a go, see what you can do. You'll just need a little bit of help lifting your wheel up onto the bricks. Yeah. And yeah, give it a go, see what you think. It should, when you're standing too, it should be about at your navel.
Yeah.
The wheel head should.
Is that your belly button?
And then my feet are on those kind of the garage mechanic padded floor tiles. So you're not standing on concrete or whatever. Yeah. Hurt your feet.
Is your navel your belly button?
Yeah. Okay. Your belly button.
Your belly button. I'm halfway through my second glass of wine. And I haven't eaten anything today.
All right, 45 minutes in. Let's go.
Let's go. I'm not going to drink any more wine because then I'll get way too drunk and I won't be able to make dinner. But
I thought you were going to say I wouldn't be able to make sentences.
No, I need food. Food is essential. Okay.
All right. Do you have the question up that we're going to talk about today for the topic?
I do. All
right.
Okay. This is from eCeramics UK. E.Ceramics UK. So it says, hi. Firstly, a huge thank you for sharing your knowledge and general... What the fuck? You moved it. Okay. In general life... life shit on the podcast. Listening has helped me get through some dark times and motivated me. I am a registered occupational therapist in the UK, and due to ill health, I now work part-time hours after being full-time my whole adult working life. Part-time is not ideal, but it also gives me the chance to push and sell my pottery more. I am worried about financial stability, especially in today's economy. My question to you, wonderful potters, is how much can you realistically earn as a part-time potter with the ability to make approximately 20 pieces a week max, mostly mugs and pieces of similar size? Am I being delusional thinking I can sell to make up to a full-time salary or more? I have done one show and sell privately via my Instagram, but I am skeptical at people... I am skeptical that people will continue to buy my pieces. Okay, so as per the usual, we look up eCeramics UK on the Instagrams, and I've already looked her up and had a little
searching,
chat with her.
Searching. I have not.
But
E.Ceramics.
E.Ceramics.UK. Lloyd.
Emmanuel.
Emmanuel. I know, I was thinking that, like, Lloyd is Emmanuel.
Oh, man, these are classic basic bitch pots.
And they're great. They're fucking great.
They look great,
yeah. We mean that in the highest compliment possible, by the way.
Yeah.
Because basic bitch pots are, like, great. Fucking great. Yeah, like, this is like a classic pot I can see, like, every woman from 30, or, like, 25 to 40 buying. Like, especially that, like, watches Joanna Gaines on the weekends. Like, this is, it's, like, basic white on dark clay body, straight walls, good handles.
Did you see her with the kiln at the bottom, too?
Yeah.
So she's kind of in that, she kind of looks like she's in that,
demographic already.
Kind of demographic too, yeah.
You're cute as fuck. We like to encourage as we do this.
So she said she did one show, Okay, I think I see the show that she did. So it was like at a yoga studio.
Yeah, market. And it looks like her table setup is like very, you know, like white tablecloth, a couple risers, and some bowls and mugs and some spoon rests, and that's in some cups.
Yeah. Very her work is very simple pieces,
but good.
Smooth sides. And then typically like solid glaze colors.
Yeah.
And then features the clay to help contrast it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, where do we start here? Approximately 20 items per week.
Yeah, but first, I think it should be mentioned that we do not in the United, like, we don't live in the United Kingdom, so we may be a little bit skewed on our perception, because I know that we've done that before and, like, said, you know, oh, you can make these a little bit more, and Lindy was like, no, fucking no, you can't. like, so...
Yeah, the market for, you know, $15 spoon rests...
Right.
Is not the same there as it is here.
So keep that in mind. So we won't be talking about, like, the prices of your items, but let's see. Also, I'm going to plug a little bit. If you do want to throw more pieces during the week, I do consultations. Can work with your United Kingdom schedule.
Yeah, I think throwing the 20 pieces a week max is definitely something that could vary. I'm not sure how long she's in it or has been in it. Her first post was February 6th, but that doesn't tell us how long she's actually been making pottery. But it's definitely something that can improve over time. Like you, I mean, like you've proven with the people that you've consulted with, it's a skill that can be honed and improved over time, and you can get better and better. I think batching your work makes that even more efficient.
Yeah, especially if you have, like, stuff like basic... I almost don't want to say basic pottery, but it is. It's simple. Simple pottery that is, you know, like, straight-walled and stuff like that. It's very consistent. It can be easier to, like, kind of, like, if you can batch those in 30, you know, like, batching them in a way that will make it faster. You know, that can help with your speed.
Yeah. I would, and the batching leads me into, I don't know. I feel like when you make so few items and you're just trying to get a batch of finished pieces.
Yeah.
So you tend to make a cross section of forms.
Yeah.
And you make fewer of them. So whereas you or I would make 30 mugs at a time.
Yeah.
She might be more inclined to make like 6 mugs at a time or 10 mugs at a time.
Right. Okay. Yes.
And that's going to cut down your efficiency because, like, I can't even get into the groove of handling mugs if I have a total board of 10, I'm going to get into the groove by handle like 5 or 6. And then I'm like, oh, well, this is nothing.
Yeah.
And then by the time you're in the groove, you're done with 10 of them.
Definitely.
So. Or, like, trimming bowls. I mean, I feel like I'm in the groove after, you know, 3 or 4. If you've only got 4 or 5 to do.
Yeah. I think...
you're missing that spot of, like, optimal working.
I remember this video that Simon Leach did a long, long time ago. And when I was, like, trying to decide if I wanted to do pottery full time. And he said, very plain and simply... He was like, if you can't throw a pot in 1 to 2 minutes, you can't be a full-time potter. Like, you just can't. And I agree with him to a point, but I think that, like, 20 pots a week, if you were making really elaborate pieces and really expensive pieces, would be no problem as far as, affordability. Not affordability, but as far as, like... supporting yourself is, but as somebody with that's like saying right now, hey, right now I can throw 20 pieces max. It almost needs to double.
Well, it's also a little deceiving when I look at 20 pieces max. Is that start to finish? Because I never get that granular with it to say I make 20 pieces a week because there's no pieces I'm starting and finishing within a week. So I would more go to the month at end of it and say, okay, how many pieces am I? But even then it's like, that's where it's always weird when you get questions from customers, how long does it take you to make this? 30 minutes, but it's spanned over like 3 weeks,
right?
You know? So I don't know. I mean, maybe when you were, it depends on what your goal is here. Is your goal to sell the pieces you make as quickly as you make them?
Right.
Or is it building up inventory so that you can go to shows or do a restock and have an assortment of pieces at every month? Or
right. Because so 20 pieces, let's assume that you're selling at $30, which is probably like 25 euros. Let's assume you're selling like 25 euros. It's going to be about $600. I have no idea what that is in euros, but let's assume that it's like $600 a week. That's a pretty penny. I mean, like, that's not too shabby for a part-time situation. Yeah. You know, if your goal is to sell all 20 of those mugs a week, and then times four, that's $2,400 a month. And that's not bad. I mean, like, as a part-time
situation. That, I mean, that's good. Yeah, if you can sell every single piece that you make in a month.
Exactly. If you can make and sell those.
I wouldn't say that's realistic, necessarily, to sell every single piece that you've made in a month. I would say, I don't know, for me, I would throw out maybe, like, selling 60% of what you make in a month is probably hitting pretty good.
For sure. But, like, you know, just on the numbers basis, as far as that goes, that's not bad. I mean, like, I would say maybe shoot for 30 pieces a week, you know, like 30 pieces a week, that increases that. And then your realistic outcome is about $2,400 a month. If you are going to shows, if you are hitting it online really hard, if you have Etsy or whatever like that, then it's realistic for you to make like at least a part-time living. As far as full-time living, you can't do that until you're not being given another salary.
For me, I think the full-time part of it relies on you to have a baseline of customers that you can sell to. It's really difficult. Not that I've done this, but it just seems so difficult to go out of college. You don't have a basic set of customers yet.
Yeah.
You make your work. And you are finding customers as you are making work and needing to make ends meet.
Yeah. That's really tough.
If you build that set of customers as you go and figure out, you know, make mental notes of what colors people are attracted to, what forms people are most attracted to, so you can use your time wisely throughout the week to make sure that the pieces you're making have a good possibility of selling, but you also can make a cross section of pieces if it's important to you to have different forms in stock. I think we've talked about it before, but you know, how important is it to have a mix of 10 forms you make versus 5 or 6 forms that you focus on making? So that's something to weigh and figure out over time as you're doing it part-time. That's where you get a lot more flexibility with taking chances and, you know, getting the customer feedback where you don't have to sell things. Because then you're going to make some sacrifices and you're going to have to make some concessions of what you want to be doing for things that you have to be doing to sell. So, I had a question about the pieces you were making in a month or in a week. What would you recommend she do to help increase that number? I would personally say focus on making a specific form that week instead of making a cross section. Like maybe this week I only focus on mugs. Next week is only bowls. And then
I 100% agree. Yeah, because if you focus on making only that same piece every week, then you are naturally just going to get better at making that form. It just comes to you, you know, like, and also not only that, but paying attention, because, you know, I hear so many people who are like, oh, I just zoom out when I'm throwing pottery. Like, no. If this is your job, you do not zone out. That is not what we do. We pay attention to every single step to make sure that you are effectively and efficiently doing those steps. Because when you're paying attention, that's when you find out what you can do differently.
Yeah.
It's not like...
Treat it like you would work. Like, you're going to focus when you're working because they...
Well, I disagree.
The people are paying you to be optimal.
I disagree, but... because sometimes when you're working, you hate your job and you, like, don't want to do it efficiently. Treat it like you're being paid per piece. Like, treat it like every single piece matters. So that... And, like, time yourself, you know? Like, put a time, like, set a timer and count it up. Don't count down. Count up and see how long it's taking you to finish something. Put a show on that's an hour long and say, hey, I'm going to only throw during the show. Like, do certain things in a show that you already know, so you don't have to look at it. Do certain things.
Not something with subtitles. Or...
Yeah, not like I would watch MASH because I've seen MASH a billion times and I can quote it, you know, or Cinderella or something like that I've seen a bajillion times, mm-hmm. in Canto. Like, do, you know, but time it out so that when you, because now that you've decided that this is something that you want to do for your job, you have to treat it that way. So the only way that you can progress with getting money is by progressing in your skill. And you have to like be serious about that.
I think it would be a fun experiment. You talk about timing yourself. I think it'd be fun to watch a show that you've seen an hour of. Mm-hmm. See how many pieces you throw in that hour. And then watch a show that's new that you have, like, or listen to a podcast that is thought provoking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And see how many pieces you make in that hour and, like, compare them. Because I personally can't listen to certain podcasts if they're thought provoking, mm-hmm. or whatever, because they take my attention away. But it depends on what it is. If it's a form that I'm very zoned into naturally and I don't need to focus as much, then I can pick certain entertainment.
Right.
That will take my, that can have me kind of straddling the work and the watching.
Yeah.
But that'd be a fun experiment that you should try, and then you can challenge yourself and figure out, like, what's your most optimal working condition.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody, I was doing a consult recently, and that was basically the issue. Or not the issue, but, like, what they needed to work on, you know? It was like... Okay, when you throw, are you paying attention? Are you paying attention to what you're throwing? And it was like, I mean, yeah. I'm like, yeah, but are you paying attention enough to, like, look at your pieces? And are you paying attention to where you're getting paid per piece? And she was like, absolutely not. You know, and...
Like, if she was asked, how long did it take you to throw that just now?
Right.
She would have said, I don't know, what was that, like 3 minutes? And it was like actually 6 minutes?
Or, yeah, I mean, she was definitely way better than that. But, like, yeah, it was definitely like, hey, you have to pay attention to what you're doing. This is not a question of, like, once you start this as a business, it's not a question of if you like it or not. You know, it's like, I don't care if you love throwing or if you don't love throwing. If you're going to make money at it, you have to be a certain... You have to... Like, this is just generally, like, you have to make them in a time that makes sense. You know?
Yeah, you have to work at a certain pace. You can't work at a snail's pace.
Right. I mean, unless you're selling your pieces for thousands of dollars, but nobody's doing... I mean, there are a few that are doing that, but we don't like them.
Very few.
No, I mean, we don't care.
Yeah, and I think... and I think, like, some of the stuff that Becca talks about with her throwing efficiency, and she's talked about it at ClayCon West a couple times, like, there are some concessions you can make with, okay, I'm not as anal retentive about my breaking down the steps as minimal as possible, right. Because you're not trying to make money at it, but if you are, you should be focused on how you can get more efficient. I know. I feel like some people, it's like a bad word to say, like, you need to be more efficient. You need to be throwing that faster. And they can associate that with, like, oh, well, I'm like, for no good reason, I'm going fast.
Yeah.
And it's not helping me to go fast because I'm getting more reckless when I'm going right. faster, but it's more about cutting out the fluff.
Yeah, about cutting out the fluff. And like, I think that, you know, I definitely think that you can make pottery full time or even part time, you know, selling, even if you're doing 20 pieces a day, but those 20 pieces have to be marketed.
She said 20 pieces a week. Sorry,
a week. But those 20 pieces have to be marketed appropriately, so you're selling those pieces. So, like, it takes work on all of the ends, too. You know, like, yeah, you could be the fastest potter in the world, but never sell a single pot. You know, mm-hmm. like, you could be like me and go to a market and sell $150. Like.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. You could... Once you get to a point where you're more focused on the selling part, you could be back to making 20 pieces a week, but you're just making them more efficiently.
Yeah.
And you're spending more time marketing and selling it.
It's like such a, it's so, I hate business. It's so like hard because you have to have like all of these things, right? Like you have to have an Instagram following. You have to, well, and if you don't have an Instagram following, you have to be really fucking good at selling at shows. And if you're not really good at selling at shows, you better be fucking good at selling online. And, you know, and it like all of these things that have to like line up and be good. Like you're really, really good at selling at shows. Like online, obviously you could use some help. Like, right. And I'm just, I don't know what I am, but like, you know, I'm not like great at selling at shows and I'm not great at selling online. I'm like in the middle for both of them, but it's just like, you have to work really hard. Like I spent almost 2 hours setting up like a fair account for wholesale and it was just all this logistical shit that I'm just not good at. Like, how do you describe a spoon rest? I don't know, in 5 words, like, this is a spoon rest. but, like, then Rebecca sends me this, like, long text that's, like, a beautiful handmade gift, produced by someone who is local and blah, 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 blah. And she goes, and that should have every single word in your SEO that people are searching for. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, how do people know this shit? You know, like, there's just so many different aspects of business that you have to know in order to be successful. And of course you can get lucky and get famous, but then like sometimes that even comes and bites you in the ass. Like,
yeah, you have to kind of pick and choose. It's like, are people gonna buy my spoon rest because they like my carefree attitude around them? But the people that are most likely to buy them are people that don't already know you,
right?
Most likely. Just like it shows, like, people don't buy spoon rest from me because I'm super efficient and...
Right, no.
I mean, they kind of speak for themselves, but people come and they're like, this fits with something that I need.
Yeah.
Same with, like, shot glasses on Etsy. Like, people that know me are not buying my shot glasses on Etsy. They're discovering shot glasses because they're searching for shot glasses. And they happen to match what they're looking for aesthetically.
Right.
And that's where, like, the search terms and the keywords and describing them appropriately so people know the size of them and what to expect and giving them color options that will meet what they are looking for. And, you know, the bluntness and the simplicity may be, like, what you want to do as a seller, but for the people that are actually going to be buying it in the market for your pieces... need to be able to find you in the slew of other spoon rests they could probably be buying.
Yeah.
And that's where the SEO and the marketing side of it comes in.
Right. Oh, and I wanted to add something. Like, we kind of got off on a little tangent, but also I think that it is really important to have a variety of different prices if you are looking to do this full time. Even if you like hold on to a mixing bowl or a big bowl for a year, just to have something that's like a showpiece, like a piece that's like, oh, hey, that's really cool. Let's go to this.
An attention grabber.
Sorry, I'm a little intoxicated. And then he smirks and then have something that's like really, like appropriately priced, like your shot glasses or my pinch pots that are cheap and easy to pick up and bundle and then use as stocking stuffers or something like that. And then you have your mugs, because what that does, that those like small ticket items, those grab the people that were never going to buy anything anyway, but they're like, oh, this is so cute. And then they're like, oh, this is cheap enough to buy. So they buy those. Mm-hmm. And then the Showstopper Beast brings the people that are like, I'm willing to buy something for $25, $35, $45. But that's beautiful. But I think I'll just stick with this mug. So then you're going to start selling most of your medium price items. If you have a high and a low, then the medium will sell the most.
And I think the medium price items are great, especially if you're doing shows. They're great for your return customers. That's mm-hmm. for me. I might have got a customer that bought a spoon rest from me last year. They love their spoon rest. They've used it. Maybe they got a mug. They love their mug. They used it. They're looking to buy a mug for their family member's birthday is coming up. Or they see a soup bowl that I have that are brand new products this year. And they're like, oh, that's a soup bowl.
Yeah.
Or you know, they get that use with your work. They like it. And then they're coming back for more. And they're trying to figure out what they want to add to their collection.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the middle priced items help. And maybe, I mean, maybe they do buy a serving bowl or a pitcher that's really just really nice.
Yeah.
That matches what they've already bought. Or it's just like, oh, I just love this piece.
Yeah. You know? And also, I would also say especially, I don't know, I could be completely wrong, but I've always like viewed England or the UK as like beer drinking people, you know, just like, or alcohol driven, you know, they're just, I don't know, the alcohol's been around forever and they embrace that. But I would definitely, instead of just mugs, definitely have something that's an alcohol driven item, like a beer stein or a wine glass or a shot glass, something that people are gonna be like, oh yeah, like I drink that, you know. So
I'm curious if the UK and they're really into like glassware,
I don't know,
or where pottery fits in, because I always see the UK pottery to me always seems like it's always very clean. It's kind of got that vibe where it's like solid colors. You're not gonna see a lot of intricacy.
Yeah, it seems like very cottage pottery to me.
Yeah.
Cottage style. Typically.
Yeah, and I don't know what it is about
which
that.
Which is hilarious that makes it that because way, but England was the they were the people that literally almost like they made bone china popular. Which I think is hysterical. Yeah. Like it's not it wasn't any of the Asian countries. It was England.
Really? Yeah,
they like perfected the bone china like market essentially, and like the really pristine like china, porcelain china, it was England, and then Japan came in and was like, oh, that's nice, and then they took it. Like I think that England originally took it from Japan, but then they were the ones that made it good, and then it scooted back to Japan and to like China.
Really? Yeah. Is that from that? Didn't you read a book or something that was about that?
Yeah, there's a lot of,
a lot of appropriation. From what you're saying.
Ceramics is just riddled with appropriation between England and China and Japan and America. It's like it just goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. So it's, you know.
Yeah. I also wonder if, because the pieces are simple, if it's harder in that market, because not that it's like easy, but like if
it's saturated,
people that are really skilled at it make it look like it's easy. They make them look really simple and like aesthetically pleasing, and there's a lot of people, like how many people can make really simple forms, although it can be more difficult to make really simple forms somewhat
well,
like imagine in America I feel like it's more variety of designs and sculptural parts to it, and like more maximalist like design on some pottery. And maybe that's just because that's what I see on Instagram, and that's like some of the people I follow, but like the simple, it seems like it would be an easier start to finish to make simple pottery than it would be.
Well,
to make more intricate stuff. So maybe it's harder to stand out.
I think with simple pottery, your advantage is that your production can be very slimmed down super well. You know,
mm-hmm.
glazing, trimming, it's all the same. So it's very easy to kind of like pinpoint it and make it like very yeah. seamless. And side point, Isaac always is like, bro, you have to have more layers. People love layers. And I'm like, Isaac, that is not my style.
Is he talking about like his wall mugs?
Yeah, he's like, people love the wall mugs. And I'm like, Isaac, I'm not going to put 50,000 decals on my mugs or mid-century modern. He's like, more layers.
You need more layers.
Yeah, but no, I agree. Like, I think that, yeah, you have to, like, find your market, essentially. Oof, that's hard. I mean, like, we don't know anything about the United Kingdom. We should go. Yeah. Let's go.
And I remember when I was visiting Iceland.
Yeah.
I think it was 3 years ago now. I went into one of the studios and talked with them, and they said the material sourcing is really hard for them mm-hmm. because they have to import everything.
Yeah.
So that's why they don't. And then the energy that they can use, it's mostly geothermal. So right. the energy consumption is different. So I think they have to electric fire, and it's a lot of, you know, mid-range mm-hmm. or lower fire. You know, you're not going to see like wood fired pots right. there, because they're sourced for wood and, you know, stuff like that. Or like gas. I don't think gas is really a big thing there.
Yeah, and like natural gas. Yeah.
So like gas firing is not really a thing. So you kind of work with what you have. And I don't know if some of that is also UK based, where like electricity, you know, having access to electricity right. for high fire, where you tend to go to like mid range.
Right.
Or lower fire.
Just another reminder of how lucky we are to be in the United States that has this type of energy system, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, like, I'm sure a lot of places don't have the flexibility that you could electric fire, mid-range, high fire, gas fire, reduction fire,
yeah, fire.
Wood fire, soda fire, salt fire, yeah. pit. Like, there's so many options. I'm sure it's available in some other places, but...
It's definitely...
And I don't know why we just have, maybe it's because we take things from everywhere else.
Yes, it's because
and
we take things from everywhere else.
Have all the options.
But I mean, energy, energy comes from, like, the United Kingdom is such a small country compared to the United States. The United States is a huge country, right? And so, like, our energy sources from California to fucking New York, like, you know, there's, and they use wind energy, water energy, like dams, wind, solar natural gas, like there's so many available options in the United States that other countries that are smaller don't necessarily have access to, because they don't have such a range of climates that we do, and we're very lucky because of that, you know. And like, we sometimes forget the fact that other countries are not as lucky.
Yeah. And that probably tends to not pigeonhole them, but it limits yeah, them definitely. On what they can.
For sure.
Yeah. And it's probably more difficult with the, I mean, we talk about the marketing aspect, but like your stuff would stand out so much more if your pieces were completely different. And like, if people just haven't got, they just don't have that vibe of like, that's what they're looking for.
Yeah.
It just makes it harder to sell that stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, especially, I would imagine in the United Kingdom, I would imagine that clay is pretty big. You know, I mean, that is...
Yeah, I would believe that.
It's not like a small... I mean, it's been a lot of what that country is. And
do you mean the number of, like, clay artists in clay?
Yeah, like, artists in clay, but also, you know, the just...
appreciation
the
for
appreciation
it.
And the history of clay in the United Kingdom is huge, so the competition I imagine is fierce, But yeah, I mean, okay, so let's go back to the original question. Do you think, like, point blank, do you think if you're making 20 pieces a week, a month, a week, a week, so 80 pieces a month, do you think you could do part-time? Was it part-time or full-time?
I mean, she's...
I'm sorry.
Am I delusional thinking I can sell to make up to a full-time salary or more?
Yeah. Stop.
I don't know what a full-time salary would be there. Boy, it is getting fat. If it's anything like here.
Yeah.
I mean, what's considered baseline full-time salary here? Like 50 grand?
I think 40 to 50.
That would be tight. That'd be very tight. I don't think 20 pieces would cut it.
Okay.
I think 20 pieces, you could probably get to like 25.
An average annual salary for a full-time worker in London is in 2021 was over 39,700 British pounds a year. Oh, I apologize. You're not on euros. You're in pounds.
We said euros. It's British pounds.
I apologize. I'm so sorry. Anyway, let's put it up to 50. Let's say 50,000 pounds. Because I think these always kind of like lowball you. So like 50,000 pounds a year. Doing 20, I don't think you could. Now, if you were efficient and you bumped that up to maybe 40 pieces a week and you doubled that, absolutely. I think you could. Yeah. You know, and what that means is...
Do you think the 40 pieces gives her the potential to sell that much? Or the potential income she could make if she sold every single piece would be 40.
No, I think that you could.
Or 50.
No, because I'm not making 40 pieces. Oof. Yes, I am.
A week?
I'm making
40 pieces a week. Sounds like a lot, though.
How many pieces a week do you make?
I don't know. I was basing this question on start to finish, though. So
okay, let's just not base it on start to finish.
So that would be 80 pieces a month that you would have finished.
I think that it needs to be up from 20. That's basic.
Yeah. Like, what if we say like 30?
Okay, 30. I think that 30 is reasonable. I mean, like, it's so hard. I feel like we need to like talk to Lindy or something and see how many pieces she
makes. And we also don't have e-ceramics here to say... When you say 20, are you meaning start to finish?
Right. But eventually they're going to finish anyway. So, yeah. But like, it's so hard because like, we are so much faster and we do a lot more than a lot of people. You know, there's tons of people that make like a part-time living selling 20 pieces. I'm sure selling 20, like making 20 pieces a week, 20 to 30. And that maybe just, you know...
I think, like you said earlier, it's just it's a skill of being able to reproduce things quickly, and finding things that you can get really good at. So, if I just challenge somebody to say, "Hey, I've never thrown a spoon rest," all right, your challenge this week is to throw me 30 spoon rests.
Right.
See how long it takes you, and then next week you're gonna throw 30 more. Yeah. And then you just keep throwing 30 a week. Yeah. Is that a bad challenge?
No, I think that's a great challenge. And it also is like, it's kind of like a budget, right? Like you use that like 1 month to build up your budget so that you're not like month to month anymore. You know, that's like, it like gives you a solid base. That's like, okay, I have 30 of each pieces. Like I have 30 spoon rests, I have 30 cups, I have 30 mugs, I have 30 bowls. And I can work off of that, you know? And then you're never like behind. You always have it.
Yeah. And then as you need to ramp up a certain thing, let's say you go to a sale and you sold half of your mugs.
Yeah.
Then you can go in the studio and focus on mugs that week and not have to focus on making a cross section of the other stuff. And you'll be in a good spot because you're going to make them more efficiently. And then when you go in and you need to make 10 spoon rests. It's, you make them like that, and it's nothing. I mean, I still personally don't make a specific form for the whole week. I probably make 3 or 4 forms in a week.
Right, but you, but I think.
But I've got to a point where I can stagger my time and my schedules so that if I throw a spoon rest today, it's because I can come into the studio tomorrow and clean them up and stamp them and they're done.
And you're like kind of a superhuman in the sense of that. Like we're talking about real people who.
I mean, you have to get to that point where you understand that when you make something, this is what it's going to take to get it to the finish line.
Yeah.
But, like, that's where damp boxes could come into play, and that could be beneficial. I know, but
for somebody, like, learning and for somebody, like, trying to, like, develop a technique, doing the same thing that whole week will really teach you discipline, and it will teach you what you can do that can be longer. And also, I would recommend also, as you're growing your business and as you're, like, continuing to sell stuff, you should be filming yourself throwing. That's the biggest... Oh my gosh, you can learn so much from filming yourself throwing.
What do you do with that after you film
watch
it?
Because you just watch it. And like
you watch it and what are you looking at?
You're looking at your movements and like you'll know. You'll say, "Oh, I could have done that differently."
What's the best perspective for somebody to be filming it? The best
perspective is on the right side. So that you...
Assuming you're a right-handed thrower?
Assuming you're a right-handed thrower, which most people are. But on the right side, probably at 2:30 o'clock, like almost at 3, but probably at 2. 2 o'clock on the clock. That's probably your best angle. Then you can see both hands moving. And I guarantee that when you watch it back, you'll be like, oh, I did that. I should have done that differently. And that will teach you so much. So much.
Plus, then you've got some videos to document for social media.
And you don't even have to like film like 30 pieces. Just film like 2 or 3. But like start filming. Forget that the film is there. Like forget that the camera's there.
Yeah, don't feel like you're making Speedy Gonzalez.
Right.
Like,
you don't have to make this for anybody. Nobody has to see it except for yourself. So keep that in mind. Yeah. So I think the answer that we've come to is that I don't think 20 pieces a week is doable full time for sure. But I think that there's a lot of things that you can do to get to 30, 40 pieces a week. And that is full time numbers, potentially. Yeah. Depending on what you're selling. If you're carving and doing all the things and selling your pieces for $100 a week, $100 a piece, that's completely different.
Yeah.
What I would recommend is set a goal, a financial goal for you for each week, and see how many pieces that makes. And then move that, like, so try and make those pieces in that week, and then kind of, like, go from there. And then also pay yourself. Weekly.
What about there's a comment in here about being skeptical people will continue to want to buy my pieces.
Oh, yes.
I think at a certain point you have to put that out of your mind of like worrying that somebody's not going to be there to buy it.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I've come to a point where I don't expect that my work's going to sell out when I do restock.
Right.
Like, it's just become an expectation, and it doesn't stifle me from making certain things because I'm like, nobody's going to want this, but you know, I think you need to, and that also plays into the quality that you're looking for. Like the standards you have, you need to set yourself with a certain amount of standards of what you want from your work so that it makes it something that people want to buy, and it's not, you know, oh, I made it with this, you know, is this good enough that somebody's going to want it? You need to be making it with the intention of I'm confident in what I'm doing, and I know what it needs to look like so that it will be marketed and like people will want it. Does that make sense? Like, it's got to be to a quality that you're happy with, and as well as, like, customers understand that it's quality enough.
Yeah. Can I say this? This is so funny. Merritt, my coworker, her boyfriend, was talking to her, and she was like, he was like, he goes, you know what? Men are so much better at selling stuff because they have this, like, egotistical, like, side of them that's just like, I'm going to sell this piece of shit for $5,000. Like, and they have that, like, ego inside of them that's like, yeah, it's worth $5,000. And he told her, he was like, you just have to, like, pretend that you're a man that's just, like, super, like, has a super high ego that's like, yeah, my shit is worth it. Like...
Well, I wasn't saying it like that. I was saying, like, you need to build standards. I was just thinking
about that when you said that and, like, how he said it. And I was, it's so true where you have to be, like, super confident in yourself, almost to the point of a fault. Like, you have to be like, yeah, my shit's the shit. Like, my pottery is the fucking shit.
And, because you're saying you shouldn't have that question in your mind of worrying that somebody else is not going to want to buy it.
Yeah, don't even have that question. Just be like, you know what? There's a billion people in this world. A billion.
Somebody's gonna want it.
You know? Like, be the egotistical bro that that you need to be.
Yeah.
Should we end with that?
Be the egotistical bro
that you need to be.
I don't even know how to reply to that.
It's just like it's so good. It's just like, you're right. Like, they're selling fucking soap. Like, the Sasquatch soap, that Sasquatch soap. It's like, it's just fucking soap. It's handmade soap. But because they're like, look at this soap. You're a man. That's why they're selling it.
You're a man with this soap. I don't know. I think also we've kind of mentioned it, but, and I don't know the market for selling in person in the UK, but I think we've talked about it before. Like, you need to get out in front of people one-to-one.
For sure.
To really get some feedback and input about what people are responding to from your work.
And even like what I'm doing right now is, like, I'm doing a farmer's market and making $150, maybe, a market. I do not consider that a failure. And the reason being is because I've developed this, like, family within the market. And what that does is that connects you with local business owners. And then even if you're not selling, people are still coming into your booth and you're talking to them. So that connects you with local people. And, like, don't put down the shows that are consistent just because you're like, I'm not going to make money. No, because connections matter. Like, talking to people and seeing people and, like, finding out that they own a store or whatever, that matters. And you're, like, you will get recognized out in the wild, essentially. And that is really important.
And it's good in general to just look at the bright side of a shitty show, too. Totally. It's like, you know, you obviously got something out of it.
Yeah, I love going to farmers markets. It's like the highlight of my week.
Yeah, it's a consistency for you.
I mean, it's like the only time I go out into public during the week, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, until you're to a point. Plus, it's good to just get a cross-section of different shows that you see to see what kind of customers are there. Helps you figure out how to organize your booth so that you can have the best pieces in front of people for that market. Mm-hmm. And you're not really going to know that just doing a market once. I feel like I have to repetitively go to shows more than once to actually understand. And I mean, I'm pretty observant anyways. So, like, I can take away from a market seeing, like, what people are picking up, what people are spending.
Yeah.
And, like, okay, maybe next time I'm not going to bring, like, these days, I don't even take planters with me to shows at all.
Right, and, like, I sell, like, tons of planters at my shows. So, like, that's the difference, you know, like, we have different things, so we sell different things, you know?
Right. So, I know what needs to be front and foremost in view, so people get their attention, as well as, hey, this is a specialty item that they might be interested right. in, like the oil bottles, that they might not have thought they needed, mm-hmm. or they already have, like, some people are out of the mug game. If mugs are all you make, you're going to cut out a lot of customers, because a lot of people don't have space for more mugs, yeah. or they have one or two mugs that they love a lot, and it's going to take a lot to replace that mug.
For sure.
Or add to the collection. So
that's when you switch to the wine game.
That's where you have to have other...
Because guess what? You can never have too many wine glasses.
Yeah, other appealing items that can sell. You're good.
Speaking of wine game, I have this lovely cup.
Pines and pottery. Nice. Yeah. Is that completely unglazed on the bottom edge? Is that like a pink glaze? Oh, yeah. Okay. It looks like terracotta.
She like upped the price, and I remember her saying like nobody's buying these because the price is up. So then I went and bought one.
See, that's something like the tea bowls. Like that has got to be a hard sell, especially to people that are just normies. Mm-hmm. Like they're priced because they're a tea bowl,
yeah.
as well as you know the angles on it. And it's like,
yeah. I love it, though.
It's a tough sell for somebody that's just like, I'm just going to use that for my bathroom yeah. cup. Why do I got to spend $75 on that?
I was going to buy this whatever. And give it to a, like, just save it as a gift for somebody. And then I was like, fuck that. Like, I'm just going to use it. Because it's really nice. I mean, like, obviously, I like everything that she does. But, yeah, it's just really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it when people make cups that you can put your pinky under, so you can like hold it up.
Oh, that is nice. And it's not like sitting on the table when you put Correct. Your pinky under it.
Yes, it's nice. It's a nice
one. I am learning there are certain specialty items that are becoming more like helpful to the business. Yeah. Not that I'm going to be making like butter crocks or anything, but
absolutely not.
Like soup bowls, super easy.
So
just put a handle
easy.
On a fucking bowl,
so easy.
And it's like. Okay, I could throw a few in there and, you know, sell it for 30 bucks instead of 24 bucks, which...
Oh, sorry, go on.
30 bucks versus, like, 24 bucks, but I'm like, well, I think my cereal bowls are 26 now, but I'm like, $4 more for a handle, but I'm like, but you sell a mug for 34 and it's less clay
right.
for more money, but the bowl is not as much as... It's like, what?
I know, I hate that
but it's gotta
bowls
be like,
are so, like... hate that.
But I'm like, who's gonna spend $30 on a cereal
Nobody.
Bowl? I mean, maybe, but like a basic cereal yeah. bowl, like I feel like 26 is a good number.
Yeah. I
and then I'm like, I put a handle on that. I'm not gonna price it like a mug, because if it was like, oh, it's like a big mug,
yeah.
that would be like $40. But it's
mug.
Like, could you imagine a bowl with a handle on it? $40 versus $26?
Right. What the, why would you? What? Do you put your handles on upside down or do you put them on upside right?
I put them right side up, just like a mug.
Okay, I was wondering about that, because sometimes when I used to put, like, handles on right side up, the handle would, like, warp the bowl, and I was wondering if you could put them upside down, like the way that you put handles, you could very easily do an upside down handle if it wouldn't warp mm-hmm. it as much, you know?
Hmm.
But you probably don't have that much issue with warpage with the clay that you're using.
No. I actually haven't. I haven't made any soup bowls in the white clay
okay.
yet, so we'll see when I do the white
That'll
clay.
That'll be interesting.
I mean, and generally, the bowls dry more on the rims quicker than the bottoms anyway, so
yeah.
I could see where that could be an issue.
Yeah, because it's
if
still
you're
like...
trying to attach the handle too
right.
late.
And it's still like, it's like that gravitational pull, like when you're firing, that it like ovals it out, which isn't necessarily bad, but it's just, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've only done the soup bowls in the speckled clay so far. And they've turned out good.
Cool.
Pretty good. And the handles look exactly like they do on my mugs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they turn out really good. And no, the pricing is just weird, because it's like, this is bigger than a mug, but it's less priced than
yeah.
a mug, which is, but you price the mugs because people buy mugs. So
yeah.
Supply and demand, baby.
Demand. Can we end?
Okay. We are good.
I'm really hungry.
I can tell you're getting antsy. All right, thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you next
time.
Wait,
did we answer all the questions? Did we answer it?
I think we did.
Okay. Okay. Bye.
All right. Bye.
I didn't end it. Yo, yo, yiggity-yo. It's Becca here. Hey, just so you know, thank you for listening. And also, we have... What do we have again? A Patreon. We have a Patreon that you should go, and if you want to donate to, you could donate to it. If you don't, that's cool, too. But just Google Wheel Talk Podcast Patreon. Don't do the other one. Because there is a Wheel Talk on Patreon, but it's not us. So make sure you get the right one. It's in the show notes. And also, leave us a review because they're fun to read. Okay, bye!